Welcome everyone, this is All About Windows Phone Insight podcast 237, recording this on 22nd November 2017, otherwise known as a chat between Steve Litchfield and Rafe Blanford. Hi Rafe.
Hello everybody, hello Steve. Yes, good to be back on the podcast, trying to get into our regular routine. We've got the usual Windows 10 mobile stuff to go through. I'm sure we'll have a few diversions as well, but always one of the highlights when I get to chat with Steve about geeky phone stuff.
Absolutely, and unusually for the Windows Mobile, Windows Phone, Windows 10 Mobile world, we do have some new hardware to talk about. I don't know how familiar you are with Indiegogo, Rafe. We'll come to that in a moment. But first, the Wiley Fox Pro has finally surfaced and it's available for pre-order. Do you want to just bring up the page, Rafe, and I'll run through the specs for the listeners while you do that. Price is £190, so you have to bear that in mind with what I'm about to say, because that will probably be the talking point. 5-inch LCD 720p display, Snapdragon 210 chipset, 2GB of RAM, LTE Cat 4, a 2100mAh battery, 8MP camera, and that's about it for £190. I have to say, Rafe, that seems like a horrible mismatch. Do you want to just react before I take you into the realms of where I think Wiley Fox are going with this?
It does seem like a mismatch. In fact, this feels like a spec from 2 or 3 years ago, and the sort of processors reflecting that, of a low-end device that was actually costing around £100. You know, it's never quite possible to draw a complete parallel because things do change. But you know, if you think back to the, you know, things like the, you know, the low-end 5 series of Windows Phone handsets from Microsoft and from Nokia, it's kind of equivalent to that. I suspect also the components themselves are going to be relatively low quality. I mean, this was kind of shown off at IFA, and a few people had a look at it, and there weren't exactly loads of compliments coming in. It's interesting that Wiley Fox have chosen to do this. They're kind of well known, obviously, in the Android world, and effectively they take hardware, maybe put a bit of their own design across it, but largely this is kind of commoditized hardware where they're buying almost a reference design off the shelf and putting their own brand on it. It's nice enough, but £189. Now, I know in the story you've mentioned that you reckon there might be a discount for buying in bulk, but and what do you think the story is here?
Well, I think the story really is that with Android being in the news this week again for its Trojans and insecurities, I think that the Wiley Fox and others have identified that there is a market for businesses who want phones which are secure and which don't cost as much as an iPhone. So that's, I think, where they're going with this. But and I do think that once you take off VAT, which you would, of course, have to take off for a business, that takes it down to 150, then take off a discount for buying 10 of the blessed things. I think we probably are in the £120 mark for a smartphone that's very well connected within the Windows ecosystem and which is 100% secure and does have 2 years of guaranteed security updates. There is a case to be made there, Rafe.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think you're right on the pricing here. I mean, that's very much list pricing. I suspect there's better deals than that available. And actually, for companies, the difference between, say, £100 and £150 is probably, you know, doable. And it's when you're talking about having to get £500 plus iPhones for everybody that does become a factor. I mean, honestly, having spoken to lots of enterprise companies, you know, the price of the hardware itself isn't always that big a deal. It's kind of the total cost of ownership. But of course, here Microsoft does have, you know, something of advantage, because if you're already a Microsoft shop, you know, you can have a lot of the Microsoft stuff as part of your enterprise licensing. I won't go too far down that road because I'm not sure how viable that is, especially when you consider all the announcements Microsoft has been making. But I do suspect there's quite a few companies who have already got rollouts of Windows devices, aren't quite ready to switch for whatever reason might be, bespoke applications, don't want to make the change, and are kind of a bit concerned that there aren't very many low-cost handset options out there. Actually, Wiley Fox for them will be great news, because obviously they can keep on providing new devices as they break down. I mean, it's one of the things we talked about with the Lumia range, with sort of Microsoft not being able to provide replacement device or not being able to do repairs. Obviously, you could swap out some of the, you know, the cheaper devices for something like a Wiley Fox, and well, I suspect a lot of the workers might not be terribly impressed by this device. You know, it will still get the job done. And obviously, I mean, it's an interesting one because Wiley Fox are pretty canny as a company. They know their stuff. They've been around a while. So they obviously think there's enough demand in building one of these. I suspect they've, you know, been asked to do so by Microsoft. They may have even have a bit of help. But clearly, there is a business case behind it. They've done the numbers and they add up. I think that partly speaks to the fact of how easy it is probably to create one of these devices. You know, you're just using an existing Android reference design, but putting Microsoft software on it instead. It does make me wonder how well integrated it is and, you know, the performance, battery life and all of that kind of thing. But nonetheless, you know, it's kind of interesting, despite all the news recently, to actually see basically essentially a brand new Windows 10 mobile handset.
Well, there is another one on the horizon as well, and this takes me to Indiegogo, which always makes me shrink back in fear a tiny bit. But Trek Store, who are German, I believe, have launched the WinPhone 5 LTE, now, or at least announced it. This 5-inch, again, 5-inch LCD, 720p screen, but read on, because there's more to it this time. Dual-band Wi-Fi up to AC, so that's 5 gigahertz. Snapdragon 617 chipset with 3 gig of RAM, so 3, not 2. 32 gig of storage plus microSD, so again more than the Wiley Fox. 13 megapixel main camera, Continuum compatible, though sadly only via wireless, not via a wired. Glass and metal design, 2250 mAh battery, headphone jack, but micro USB data and charging, which is a bit of a downer. But the priced, Rafe, I think the early bird, super early bird discounts have gone at €200 or so. Basically, this phone is going to cost €250, which I reckon is about £200. So for £10 more than the Wiley Fox, you can get something that's dramatically better spec'd, if not quite up with the Alcatel Idol 4 Pros and the Lumia 950s of this world.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a much more reasonable price spec combination. And honestly, if I was, you know, looking to buy a relatively low-end handset, I would rather go and have a little bit extra. It's not just the things like the storage and the slightly better camera. You know, the overall performance on the kind of Snapdragon 6XX family is clearly going to be better than, you know, the Snapdragon 2XX family. And it, you know, if you're spending a bit, spend the extra 30 or 40 quid or however much the pricing works out at. You know, in terms of the overall design, I'm not sure there's an awful lot to choose between them. You know, the combination of metal and plastics and glass, as you typically get on these mid-range phones, looks like it's reasonably well put together. Obviously, we haven't seen one in person in the hand, so, you know, can't really talk about this. But I think there's a big, big caveat with this, that the Indiegogo has a project goal of about €500,000. And as we're recording this, they've got about 10% of the way towards that, with sort of something like 200 or so people pledging towards it. I find it difficult to believe that they're going to be able to meet their project goal. And they, you know, as with a lot of these things, if they don't get there, it won't get made. So I guess there'll be some disappointed people who've ordered it at the super early bird price. I may be proved wrong. There may be a sudden rush of them. But this kind of goes back to what we were saying with the Wiley Fox phone, you know, the business case for this. And actually, in your exclusive interview with them, this was covered. You know, you have to create about 2,000 of these devices in order to get to what's effectively a reasonable production run. Presumably, that's to do with the factories and the economies of scale there.
Yeah.
I'm honestly surprised it's that small a number. We've seen, you know, a couple of companies try this sort of thing in the past. You know, Ubuntu is probably the really high profile one, but even in the Windows Phone world, we've, you know, seen an attempt at this. The name escapes me. I'm sure Steve is going to remind me who it was. But yeah, I find it difficult to believe this campaign will be successful. And people are quite rightly a bit wary of these Indiegogo Kickstarters, because effectively you're doing a gamble on a product. There's no absolute guarantee that it'll all go up well. You know, you shouldn't treat it as if you're buying a product off the shelf or from someone like Amazon. Nonetheless, you know, interesting that there still seems to be some activity around this. And let's remember that Trek Store would have had to go to quite a bit of effort to put this together, to think about the product. Presumably, I suspect there may not actually be a prototype, or if there is a prototype, it doesn't look like the pictures. They've kind of done it all on spec and they would do the production run. But one other part of me is still just amazed that you can do this. If you think about hardware startups, it used to be really difficult. The fact that someone can come along and, you know, create a relatively small number of devices and make that viable as a business to create a whole smartphone is pretty incredible when you think the kind of development costs that used to go into bringing a new smartphone to the market, and years of development and probably tens of millions of pounds. And I'm sure Trekstore, you know, have done this on a budget. And yes, it's all off the shelf and commoditized, but that's kind of the point here. You know, you can do that, and it actually makes these really relatively low volumes viable. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if Wiley Fox isn't looking at a kind of a similar volume for the device it's announced, and it's sort of gone, okay, we can take a risk on that. Maybe they've got some pre-orders already. Maybe Microsoft has promised to underwrite it to make sure there are some devices around for those who want it. But yeah, interesting, even if in this particular case, I'm skeptical of whether they can meet their target. I mean, do you feel any differently, Steve?
If it was just down to end users, I think you're probably right, because you typically in these campaigns, you get most of the percentage of your initial goal in the first opening week when you have all the promotions and all the publicity. Having said that, maybe Trekstore are sitting on a couple of company orders, and they'll kick those in with, you know, 100 units here or so forth, to bump up the percentage and get to their goal later on. I don't know. It's notable, Rafe, that yes, this is kind of designed to Trekstore specifications in the sense that they've picked the actual components to be used, but it list looks awfully familiar and similar to the Cerulean Moment, was it? One of these, another Kickstarter phone from earlier this year, which failed even more miserably because that only had a much smaller company behind it rather than a large German tech company. I get the impression these days, as you say, Rafe, that you can literally go to a OEM in China and say, we want this reference design, we want it running Windows 10 Mobile, we want components A, B, C, D, and we want our logo on the back. And they'll say, yes, no problem. It'll be X number of euros, X number of dollars, and away you go. But the OEM will require a minimum order, and that's where the minimum order comes in terms of this Indiegogo goal.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And, you know, in one sense, it's hard to be too kind of positive about this, you know, for those reasons. The other thing, of course, is it's actually not very much money when you think about the totals being raised. And that says something about actually hardware in general. I suspect, you know, the cost of launching a phone like this, of course, you know, there's the overall money needed, but actually getting the marketing and the distribution right is the harder part of it. And it's very notable that companies like Wiley Fox and a couple of others that have taken this route have tended to come from people who really understand distribution in the UK market or France or wherever they happen to be launching. And it's often kind of the ex-sales people for some of the bigger brands have got the right connections in either phone shops or somewhere else, you know, the distributors, the retailers, to say, oh yeah, you know, we can do this and we can do you a really good deal. And you can bet your life that the retailers are often getting a pretty good cut in those circumstances. But that does kind of reinforce the idea that it's just off the shelf. And yeah, Honestly, these are the reference designs that kind of Microsoft paid Qualcomm and everyone else to kind of create. And we're seeing kind of the long tail effect of that, I guess. And so, yeah, it's very noticeable that there's been a few of these. There's actually, you know, we know there were a whole bunch of Windows 10 mobile devices last year from, you know, very small brands that only got launched in a few markets. And this is kind of the last hurrah of that. I mean, I'm trying not to be too negative about it because, you know, by all means, go ahead and back it if you want to do so. And it's interesting, you know, as I say, on the site, if you read the article about this, Steve has got an interview with the people behind the phone and giving the extra details, things like Continuum, and, you know, saying that this is a Indiegogo exclusive office. And that's interesting to me because obviously the entire business, the entire kind of run of this is built around just selling it through Indiegogo, which, you know, that's kind of interesting. It's not hard to imagine a company, and it doesn't have to be Windows 10 Mobile, it could be Android, you know, spotting a gap or a niche in the market and saying, I'm going to create a couple of thousand of this particular device. And, you know, it's not hard to think, okay, could it be a bit like MVNOs that get created around a specific brand, maybe a football club or something like that, and you own the official phone. Now, I think any savvy phone buyer would go, yeah, that's not the way to do it. You won't end up with a quality handset. The very fact you can do this kind of thing, almost it's like printing your own T-shirts type thing, is interesting for me, even if in this instance, I don't exactly think it's news that's going to set the Windows 10 mobile world on fire.
Absolutely. In fact, we could actually do the All About Windows Phone smartphone. Literally, we could do exactly the same thing. We could go to China, spec it all out, get some facts and figures together, launch it on Indiegogo or Kickstarter. And I think we might get a few hundred people interested. But whether or not, I still don't think we'd make ends meet. And we, as you say, we'd end up with a fairly humdrum average phone. And what we're crying out for in the smartphone world at the moment, of course, is phones that do stand out, phones that do have interest. Talking of that, we do have the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro, which is still, I've got my main SIM in it this week and really quite happy with it. I've been doing various features and I've got some more ways to get the more out of the phone in terms of imaging, in terms of performance, in terms of applications. And the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro, Rafe, is still sold on Microsoft's websites across Europe. The thing is, though, did you remember the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy thing where the plans for the demolition of Earth were hidden in a toilet with a sign on the door saying, beware on the leopard, down into the cellar, and the stairs were out and the lights were out, basically trying to make it as hard as possible for people to find the plans? Well, that's a bit like Microsoft and the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro. You have to really, really, really know it's there to find it at all. So, and of course, there's zero marketing, zero advertising, so I'm not surprised that I don't think Microsoft and Alcatel are selling very many of these, but it is a production phone. I'm presuming they've made a few of thousands, a few tens of thousands, and they'll go, because if nothing else, people with Lumia 650s, 930s, and even 950s, when these phones break, they think, well, look, I want to stay in the Windows 10 mobile ecosystem. I like Windows. I like the interface. I've got an established set of applications that I enjoy and use. So let's go for a new phone. And the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro certainly isn't all bad. Compared to the HP Elite X3, which, of course, we tried last year, Rafe, you and I would say the Idol 4 Pro is well up the X3. It's got better speakers, the same chipset. It hasn't got all the pogo pins and all the enterprise stuff, but it's got just the raw stuff that a consumer, an individual, might need. So I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the fact that it was £420 still new, which is a lot cheaper than the ridiculous prices being charged for some of the phones in the Android world at the moment. So there is actually a lot to recommend this, and putting it in the context that we've said in previous podcasts over and over again, that Microsoft is guaranteed, it has said, because it runs Windows 10, it will get 2 years of security updates and fixes and patches from the date of the current branch it's supported in. The Alcatel Idol 4 Pro is currently supported on the full Creators Update, Redstone 3. Therefore, it will get another 2 years. In fact, it's 28 months worth of updates, which takes us to the end of 2019. So you can get, right now, November 2017, Rafe, the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro, Snapdragon 820, 4 gig of RAM, terrific speakers, all of that, brilliant screen. I mean, a really, really high contrast, lovely and colourful. All of that for £420 and updates to the end of 2019. I'm surprised that more people amongst our illustrious readership aren't actually going out and buying this.
Well, I think it's still a significant investment, and I'll just be the slightly cynical person here and say, yes, it's got those so months of updates ahead of it, but actually Microsoft hasn't been terribly detailed about what those updates will include. And actually, thus far, honestly, I think it's fair to say they've surprised both of us by continuing to actually do some fairly significant updates, particularly from the app point of view.
Yeah.
As we've said before, that's largely because of the way the UWP apps work, but I shouldn't knock it.
Yeah.
But I would just inject maybe a degree of pragmatism and realism there. That if you're spending £450, you would be well advised to consider your options and maybe look at Android or one of the older iPhones. I guess you could just about get in that price bracket. On the other hand, I can understand people not wanting to shift away. You know, they like something familiar, particularly if they want a decent phone. They're not that bothered about the apps, all the stuff we talked about before. Because as you say, if you want to get the top end elsewhere, you are looking at several hundred pounds more. Even for sort of, I would say, a sort of later iPhone. And, in the Android world, when you look at the S8 and things like that, yes, again, you're spending a couple of extra £100. Now, we had an interesting debate about this kind of recently, basically saying, yeah, it's kind of worth it if you're using a phone every day. But I'll be the first to say not everyone falls into that category. However, I suspect the number of Windows 10 mobile users who are sitting there going, yes, I'm going to use the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro to upgrade is probably a relatively small proportion. I think the rest will, inevitably be looking to switch to Android or iOS, or indeed are going, actually, I don't want to change it at the moment. So probably sticking with their phone a bit longer. I suspect that would be the majority of people. You know, maybe they've had the phone a couple of years, maybe even a bit longer, and say, actually, it works, I'm happy, I won't take the plunge to have that change. And they'll probably, honestly, they'll be forced into it when the battery life gets too bad, or they can't get it repaired or something like that. I know it will surprise people listening to this podcast, but not everyone is obsessed by phones and feels the need to upgrade frequently. And it's actually something, I mean, just anecdotal, and I kind of seen some research to back this up. People are typically holding onto their phones for a bit longer now. I think that's partly because they've got more expensive and partly because kind of the incremental upgrades aren't quite so obvious. I mean, if you look at a 2-year-old flagship, you know, aside from knowing that you've got the latest thing or, you know, wanting to have the very top spec, I think functionally there's not that big a difference. You could start arguing about, you know, access to updates and things like that, but for a lot of people, I just don't think it's that big a deal. So I think one of the things we're going to see in the next few years is kind of the life cycle of the smartphone amongst a certain segment of the audience, and I would actually even go to say the majority of people getting longer. I'm sure they will still remain kind of fashion items and people wanting to have the latest and the greatest. There'll always be a segment like that, but you know, compare it to, if I go back, it may be even 5 years, and say you could kind of own a smartphone for 2 years and then it really was worth upgrading because the camera was that much better, a higher resolution screen or whatever it was. If I look back and look at the 2-year-old devices, you know, whether that's something like an S7, and actually probably the Lumia 925 is, you know, a decent example, or going back to the iPhone 6S or even the iPhone 7 and kind of looking what's available now, Would I choose to upgrade if I was sort of being rash about it and not being, I want the latest toy? Probably not, to be honest. So I absolutely expect kind of the average smartphone kind of life cycle to edge up towards 3 years.
Yeah. And talking of the Idle 4 Pro, though, and in terms of support and branches, I did want to give a shout out to a tutorial I wrote called How to Bring the Idle 4 Pro to the Full Creators Update. As you said, Microsoft and Alcatel haven't really been falling over themselves to apply support resources to this phone, having made it very nicely, and it's nicely in its box, and it's full production phone, etc., etc. But if you actually hard reset an Idle 4 Pro, or just buy one off the shelf from Microsoft.com, you get the anniversary update, which, if you remember, was August 2016. So quite an old base branch OS. This is obviously the one that they tested for the USA only Idle 4S with Windows 10, as they called it, on T-Mobile over there, trying the whole concept. And for the Idle 4 Pro in Europe, they basically took exactly the same base OS. But the Microsoft has stated that the Idle 4 Pro is fully supported under the Creators Update and Full Creators Update. So you think, okay, right, so I'll just check for updates and it'll be there. Well, not exactly. Apparently, it is actually rolling out at the moment for the 4S with Windows 10 in America on the T-Mobile. And I suspect the Idle 4 Pro, when someone gets around to it and they see the knot in their handkerchief and they push the update in December or January next year to the 4 Creators Update. So basically, it's a whole long-winded, you've got to have lots and lots of patience. But if you follow my tutorial and just jump through a few insider hoops and then leave the insider program again afterwards, you can follow the steps in order. It'll take about 2 or 3 hours because, you know, Windows updates and spinning gears and so forth. But at the end of that, you will be bang on the very latest production 4 Creators Update, and you're then on the whole track to get these updates till the end of 2019. But at the moment, you have to kind of go through this insider dance, Rafe. But it's, hey, people listening to this are geeks, and reading the site are geeks. They're up for it.
It works, and I think this ends the Steve Litchfield public service section of the podcast for anyone who has an Alcatel Idle 4 Pro. It'd be interesting to know how many of you listening to the podcast fall into that category. Probably not very many, judging by the amount of marketing it's got. And to be fair, Steve says it's still available on the UK store, so if you do want it, you can go and get it. And as I say, that goes back to the point kind of making earlier. It's not just enough to kind of produce a phone and sort of do it theoretically. You do need a big marketing push, and it still amazes me the amount of advertising you see around for phones. You know, at the moment it's the Samsung and the iPhone X, and obviously it's been a long time since we've seen any Windows 10 mobile phones being kind of pushed heavily anywhere. I think, you know, in the UK, you know, we're probably getting up on 2 years before, you know, since we saw that kind of thing. And even in the markets where Microsoft has made it available on the store, as you said, they've done quite a good job of hiding it away. But that, you know, actually the Wily Fox probably gives it a bit of publicity. You identified kind of the enterprise users going after it, and obviously they will be willing to track that down and try a bit harder. But yeah, I think that goes back to kind of being realistic about it. And, you know, you strike the right tone actually in the article, but it does seem very irritating, that Microsoft couldn't make a little bit of work. And, you know, for the devices that are out there, people who have put the money down and bought the Alcatel Ideal 4 Pro, just give them enough support. I can't believe it's that difficult to do, especially as you say in the comments we heard that it is rolling out to the 4S in the USA. So how much more work would it take to get it onto the Ideal 4 Pro? It doesn't feel like it would be very much, but I think that's probably better evidence for the degree of support that Microsoft is providing than the oft-quoted Litchfield 24 months. And you're right, they are continuing to support it and will continue to do so. That's kind of the contractual commitment or the commitment that Microsoft has put up there. But yeah, this does tell us that, you know, the number of people involved in the software behind the scenes, I would have thought, is, you know, increasingly few now.
Yeah, although the monthly updates, that's being inherited from Windows 10 on tablet, desktop and HoloLens. And I'm not talking about actually adding features and changing the UI, because we know there's zero manpower for doing that and testing that. But you do pick up, by very fact you're part of the same ecosystem, you do pick up genuine security fixes. You do pick up genuine updates to the Edge HTML engine, perhaps, and although that itself is a bit branched now. But there are some under the hood stuff which you will pick up month on month. So it's not totally requiring dedicated manpower, Rafe. Yeah. Moving on to other devices though, Rafe, I did do one of my famous camera head-to-heads, although really you should get the credit because it's you that wrote the JavaScript comparator, but there we are. Between the Lumia 950 and, get this, a Nokia, the Nokia 8, which has been widely anticipated and was the return of Nokia to the smartphone world, this time with Android under the hood. This was quite a keen comparison, not least because Nokia themselves, or HMD Global, who now make it, have been shouting about the 8's camera, but I suspect it's kind of more that the Nokia 8 is good at video, and not so much at stills. Certainly my comparison here, I don't know if whether you can bring up the images and the feature, the 950 kind of knocked it into a cocked hat, really. The 950 still outperforms where it should be. Even though it's a two-year-old phone, it's still right up with the very best in the camera phone world, even with the new Pixel 2 XL I showed, even with the iPhone 10. So the Nokia 8 really didn't stand a chance. But big thanks to KF Chan, who facilitated this and provided all the images and worked tirelessly to get the various samples. And there's actually two features up on the site, one at 8 megapixel resolution and also one at full native resolution, if people are interested in that as well. So any particular comments on Nokia 8 versus Lumia 950?
Well, I mean, it's probably a good opportunity to talk about the Nokia 8 in general. But yes, I mean, just starting with the camera comparison, it's almost embarrassing. It's not even close. I mean, as you say, thanks to KF Chan for providing it, because I think a lot of people have been interested by this. And obviously, people with long history on Windows 10 Mobile and Windows Phone and Symbian before that, you know, would have welcomed the Nokia 8 and wondered how it measures up. Looking through the photos, it's not even close. And I suppose the Nokia 8 really should be doing a little bit better, because it is effectively the high-end device from Nokia. I mean, maybe there's a bit more room for something a little bit a higher spec or a little bit more recent, but not really. What kind of struck me was a lot of it was about the kind of color accuracy and the processing and the stuff that's sort of clearly in the software side of things. And I possibly more on software than on hardware. And so, you know, you scored this out at the end. You know, it was kind of a clear win, kind of 55 out of 70 for the Nokia 8 and sort of 66 out of 70 for the 950. If anything, I think you were a little bit kind to the Nokia 8. And I suspect that's partly because of the photos that were shown in this case. I mean, Steve tends to, in these comparison news, kind of things that I'll describe as educators, in order to bring out some of the differences.
Yeah.
But then that said, actually, it was a pretty fair comparison. I mean, there's a great range of photos in here. So yeah, as I say, thank you to KFC Chan for providing these. But yeah, like I say, it's a pretty clear result. Probably not surprising when we've already had the comparison with the Pixel 2, the iPhone 10, and a few other devices recently, where People tend to be a bit cynical these days when you do these, Stephen, said, of course the 950 wins, but actually the 950 is incredibly good for a smartphone camera. And I've spoken to a number of people who I've sort of reminded them of that fact. They've gone back and tried it and gone, yeah, actually, you were right. And I mean, partly I think that's because we've seen smaller leap forwards in camera technology, and particularly with the kind of comparisons we do, which are sort of looking at quite detailed pixel pixel. It's not really considering the overall camera experience. And what I will say is I think the more recent Samsung devices, the Google Pixel, the iPhone, all have, you know, camera capturabilities that exceed the 950 in terms of some of the other things that they do. The computational photography, I mean, you could talk about portrait mode or the depth of field things on some of the newer devices. And then, of course, the ability to do things on device with those pictures. But if you were just talking about the raw capture ability, you know, it's a fair comment. I mean, that would you say that's a reasonable summary of the kind of Nokia 8 versus 950, and actually why the 950 is still winning these comparisons, Steve?
Yeah, I think there was some magic stroke secret sauce. Juha and its team, who then moved from Nokia to Microsoft, and they clearly had so much expertise in terms of image processing, how to put components together with and the specifications for certainly the PureView sensors. You know, that the idea of high resolution sensor being oversampled down to a really pure result. But it's not just that; it's everything. It's the OIS and it's the use of really high quality Zeiss optics. You put it all together. But having said that, you mentioned I compared it to the iPhone 10. If I remember right, I think the iPhone 10 just pipped the 950. So it's really a compliment to the 950 that a two-year-old phone can stand up to the very best of the end of 2017. But yeah, the Nokia 8 didn't stand a chance. There is actually a Nokia 9 coming, Rafe, so maybe that'll have a higher spec camera again.
So that's a great place to sort of then start talking about the Nokia 8 and the Nokia 9 more generally. I think the thing is that people didn't fully appreciate at the time just how much money and time Nokia were investing into the camera part of the smartphone. I think they recognized early on that that was a key differentiator. They maybe didn't shout about it enough at the time, although anyone who was writing about camera phones and would know, having talked to the team, that they were really pushing, really investing on it. The only companies really doing that to the same extent now, I think, are Apple, Samsung, HTC was for a while, maybe not so much now, but actually most of the companies now are reliant on the fact that there are great off-the-shelf components. They may not always make the most sensible decision about how you combine them, and some are making investments in software, some may be less so. Apple kind of has the advantage, I guess, of being vertically integrated and fewer combinations that it has to deal with, and it's noticeable, you know, you get that in kind of the performance on audio, for example, and the quality of reproduction for things like that. But thinking about cameras in particular, I think it's, you know, the sad reality is it's become less necessary for companies to invest loads of money to get that differentiation. And I wonder whether it was ever economically sensible for Nokia to do so. I mean, they prided themselves on the camera and it produced some amazing results, frankly. They didn't always get the credit they deserved. And I wonder whether it was reflected in the sales numbers. It's obviously an important part, and I think now it would be even harder to justify that investment in kind of an imaging team and sort of doing all this unique thing, because the differentiation between kind of having a specialist team working on it and what everyone else can achieve by just using off the shelf is probably smaller. I mean, back when, you know, you think back to the 808 and actually some of the other imaging hero products, they really were streets ahead. I mean, a long, long way ahead. And I wonder, even if there was that full team still in place, you know, I think they would be able to produce great things. And I think you can see that from the kind of the forward steps that Samsung and Apple take. But very notably, those companies who were not quite unlimited budgets available, certainly are continuing to invest heavily, aren't able to achieve the kind of the big leap forwards or the very noticeable differentiation that I think Nokia in its heyday was. And so that's kind of the situation we're in now. The other thing, I just wanted to talk a little bit about Nokia, kind of new Nokia more generally. As you said, you know, it's HMD are kind of the company behind this, and actually they're using a third party to build the hardware. And I mean, I don't want to be too harsh about this, but it's basically Nokia in name only. They've done a very good job, I think, of kind of creating the same feel around the brand, and that's things about the design elements I mean, the Nokia 8 unquestionably feels like a Nokia device, and kind of the curves and the rounded bits on it and the design elements in it. Some of the ways it sort of talks about software and Android updates and doing those regularly, even into the way it does the marketing and the ads it's producing and the teasers, all of those feel very reminiscent of Nokia. Now, partly they're doing that, obviously, for familiarity and recognition reasons. Also, quite a few of the people involved are actually ex-Nokia people, not least because Microsoft sold the last bits of the devices team off to them. But also, I understand that a few people have rejoined from marketing teams and elsewhere. Unfortunately, the kind of the hardware expertise that has been built up isn't really there. This is sort of an off-the-shelf phone, albeit wrapped in very snazzy packaging. And don't get me wrong, this is a good Android device. If you want to, you know, take this approach, you will get something. But you are perhaps arguably not getting the secret sauce that I think made people love some of the Nokia devices, certainly back in the Symbian days, and maybe perhaps not so strongly in the Windows Phone days.
Yeah.
And so that Nokia name only, it's a pretty cutting insult, but I don't mean it to be so. I think that's just the reality of the situation. And actually, if I was looking for an Android phone, you know, Nokia, new Nokia would definitely be on the list, because, you know, you are getting some other elements to it in terms of the design's very nice. But the places where it kind of suffers are in the camera, arguably probably in things like the screen technology as well. You know, the things that are purely hardware, actually some of the software elements they're doing a pretty good job on. And, I've been impressed by the speed of the updates that they've been releasing, the monthly security updates, for example. But the reality is, you know, this is Nokia, who have basically lent their brand to another company, HMD. And despite all the same people being involved, or at least some of the same people being involved, it is not the same Nokia that was bought by Microsoft. I mean, that basically withered away. Whether you choose to describe it as Microsoft destroying it, or it, you know, all those people being fired or choosing to leave the company, it's just not quite the same. And HMD are really pushing hard to recreate it, and all credit to them, they're doing as much as they can. But you also have to be realistic about how far they can take that. And, you know, the big thing for them is obviously the Nokia brand and the affection for it will only last so long when people pick up these devices and realize maybe it's not quite got that secret sauce in it. So they have got, I think, a couple of years of that kind of brand loyalty and familiarity, and actually, frankly, probably more than that. But I really hope to see in the future, maybe that will start with the Nokia 9 or maybe next year's devices, they start to put stuff in it that kind of differentiates it a bit, or they make a little bit more of an effort to make it have some of that X factor that was in those Nokia devices that made things like the N82 or the N86 or, you know, the 1020, you know, some of the Lumia devices, you know, really stand out both in design terms, but also in terms of the camera, the clever use of screen technology. You know, a lot of things we take for granted, like, you know, having always on screen or information displayed on the screen, optical image stabilization, really clever audio microphones that had much bigger dynamic range, all of those things, those were kind of the hallmarks that made people love or fall in love with the Nokia devices. They will need to do some of that if they are to kind of continue to kind of appeal to some of those core Nokia fans. And I really hope they do it, because I would love to see a manufacturer kind of take up that mantle and continue to do so. But in the meantime, I'm probably going to continue to think of them as new Nokia and, you know, not the real McCoy.
Yeah, well, it's a bit like new Coke not being as good as the old Coke. But no, let's not go there. actually, the Nokia 6 is a pretty good shout, because in addition to being a Nokia with all the stock Android and good update strategy, you've got stereo speakers, which is something I always value, and the Nokia 6 is a lot cheaper as well. So there's a good range there. Certainly, if people are looking to think to swap from a Lumia to a new Nokia, then there's plenty to look at. Just to mention that a couple of UWP apps, the ProShot, which is a camera alternative, has hit the big version 2.0. I won't go into detail, but there's loads new in terms of functions and features, and even some new interface tweaks. And I'll be coming back to that on the site in the next couple of weeks. But the one I wanted to highlight for you, Rafe, is an app called Mobile Studio U. Slightly odd name. I think it's based in Europe, and the U is actually significant for some Germanic reason. Anyway, Mobile Studio U, it's got a complete online database of phone specifications, images, video trailers, all of this, everything you'd find online if you just typed in, I don't know, Galaxy S8 specs, Galaxy S8 images, and you'd basically find yourself browsing around in Edge or Chrome or Safari for about half an hour to try to gather all the different bits. Basically, they maintain a very highly curated set of information about every smartphone in the world, and they're constantly adding to the database. And this studio, Mobile Studio U, is a front end for that database, so you can just basically browse around to look at your alternatives. So if you were, for example, thinking of switching from a Lumia 950 or something, you think, well, what else is out there? What are the specifications? How do they match up? You don't now have to even leave your Windows 10 mobile phone. You can just use this UWP app, or on your tablet or on your Windows 10 desktop, and you can instantly get a very curated, very focused set of specs, video trailers and more.
Yeah, I mean, it's impressive that it's such a seemingly comprehensive collection of information. And anyone who sort of regularly visits phone spec websites will know that, you know, there's a lot of advertising and gumph in the way. So I suspect this is a quick way to do it. I mean, I like the fact they've included some stuff from Kantar as well, because that's always kind of useful information to have to hand. Perhaps probably a bit of a niche app in some ways. It's going to be for phone fans and people writing phone reviews who want to get quick access to information. Yeah. But you know, I shouldn't knock it, because that's actually really handy. And Steve, both you and I have at various times maintained kind of reference data sets, and we know how much work is involved in doing that. So, you know, having all of this to hand is actually really useful. I mean, and I don't know about you, but I'm constantly having to think about, okay, so what was that specification? What was the screen size of that phone? You know, I need to know, you know, when you're putting together a, you know, device testing matrix or something else. So actually a really useful reference to have. And especially, you know, what's nice about this is it's kind of curated and collected. So you pretty much guarantee it's accurate, and you know that certain piece of information that you need will be available. So, you know, credit to the developer doing this. And also, and the things that impress me on the detail, it's things like getting all the images the right size, you know, and you know, similar kind of look at the way they're presented in terms of the aspect ratio and all of that sort of thing. That detail, so thumbs up. And yes, you mentioned ProShot as well. That's always been a favorite app of mine. I have to admit, I don't use it so much these days, but good to see it continuing to be updated. And it's, I think, one of the most powerful and stable and performant of the Windows 10 mobile kind of third-party camera apps. And if you haven't tried it, it's well worth having a look at.
Absolutely. You say, look, watch the space, because I'm going to come back to ProShot in terms of getting more out of that idle 4 Pro camera, because the stock Windows 10 camera really doesn't do the sensor and the camera justice, whereas ProShot does all sorts of tricks to try and get you better contrast and better auto exposure, better auto white balance. ProShot just does everything really, really well. I know it's a couple of pounds, it's a commercial application, but it's well worth buying. And at this stage in the game, Rafe, I think anything we can do to help Windows 10 developers, whether it's for the phone or the desktop, I mean, in the face of an onslaught from other platforms, an onslaught from everything being done via the browser, to have developers putting their time and effort into writing UWP apps for Windows 10, I think, you know, pay to get rid of the ads, pay to buy the apps, let's give the developers some beer.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, I'm starting to ramble. It's also quite late here in the UK, and I'm going to say goodbye. Thank you very much for listening. I'll let Rafe do the sign-off, but we'll hopefully catch you next week on the podcast.
Yeah, it's been a bit of a rambling podcast this time around, mainly from me, but thanks as ever for listening. Any feedback, we'd love to hear it, and please tune in next time.